Hello and welcome to Real Talk. I'm Susan McCabe, your host. Real Talk is the show that seeks to answer questions large and small, and we're here with you every Tuesday at lunchtime to do just that. Today's question is one that is incredibly timely, important, and tragic, and I have with me an expert in the subject of gun control and gun violence. Welcome, Margaret Heldring.
Thank you, Susan.
Margaret, you are the founder and president of Grandmothers Against Gun Violence.
That is right.
It's a Washington State organization?
Principally Washington State, but we are very excited to be receiving an increasing number of out-of-state members, women from all over the country, who are getting in touch with us asking, is there a grandmother's organization here where I live in Colorado, Tennessee, Austin, Portland, or how do I start one? So we see the possibility of significant growth coming up.
So what is your mission and how is it attracting all these people?
Yes, well, just as you said, it's such a timely and tragic topic. And as episodes like Parkland occur, and even, of course, less visible episodes such as suicide, domestic violence, gang violence, more and more people, and not only women, but largely women, are looking for a way to make a difference, to get engaged, to use their voices. They are saying, I've had enough. This is ridiculous. This is awful. There's a personal level to it. I have a child. I have grandchildren. The thought of my grandchildren or your grandchildren going to school and encountering such a thing as we've just witnessed at Parkland or in far too many places around the country really propels people to action. And the whole post-Parkland time has been a time led by these marvelous students of growth and a kind of a uptick, a surge in determination.
And have you seen, I presume you have seen, an uptick in memberships for
yes.
Grandmothers
yes.
Against Violence?
Yes, very.
Why do you suppose it's grandmothers who are responding? Why is it that grandmothers are so adamant about taking action?
That's a really wonderful question. I would say, first of all, it is not only grandmothers. There are other partner organizations. Moms Demand Action is one. The Alliance for Gun Responsibility is another. Faith communities are organized together in something called the Faith Action Network. Ceasefire, which is the oldest gun violence prevention program and organization in Washington State, is active. So there are a number of us. But I will say that there is something very special, and we're still trying to define it, about grandmothers getting involved. There's something about this stage of life where we're concerned about legacy, where the developmental task of this stage of life is generativity, where we are thinking, of course, less about our own futures and more about what is the world we're leaving behind for our children and grandchildren. And so we've discovered that grandmothers, women of a certain age, because not everybody in our organization is an actual grandmother. We have some who we call grandmother wannabes, grandmothers in waiting. There are women who say, I have grand dogs. Does that count? And we all, of course, say yes. But we've realized we've tapped into some very deep, very strong urge and even instinct to think about legacy and to take steps. And these are women. We're women of a generation that had often pretty impressive careers and jobs. And so these are women who are not usually, would not be thought of as timid.
Uh-huh.
They're women who have things to say and the courage to say it.
So it's an organization with the power, the pun, firepower.
Yes.
Considerable
yes.
firepower.
Yes.
Among your membership.
Yes.
So what are you doing in partnership with these other organizations?
Yes.
Where are you going with all this energy and talent?
Okay. We actually have three areas of focus, and one is legislative advocacy. For example, every legislative session, we pile onto a bus and we go to Olympia and we have our lobby day. We've also become pretty good, I must say, at tracking relevant bills as they work their way or don't work their way through the legislature, and we alert our membership. And we have all our members divided into their legislative district, so we can target particular districts. We often have been asked to give testimony at committee hearings. I testified on three bills this recent session that just ended. For example, we really, we email, we call. So we work with our partners to push forward useful, good gun violence prevention legislation.
So where is, and this is strictly statewide legislation,
yes,
right now.
Right now, yes.
Where is the state of Washington and their legislature in terms of bills to protect folks against gun violence?
Yes. Well, Susan, today actually there's good news and bad news on that. The good news is that the legislative session just finished. It just wrapped up. And more gun safety bills passed than have ever passed. We are moving in a really good direction. There is, I think some of that has to do, again, with Parkland and with the whole growing state and national attention on the problem of gun violence. It also has to do with the very practical political reality that if you have the majority in the House and in the Senate, there's a greater likelihood that something will happen. So the good news is that several things did happen, one of which was bump stocks are now prohibited in Washington state. Well, they will be as of July.
Good news.
Yeah, good news. Exactly. There are some bills that we really like that have to do with a verbal harassment is now considered a high risk factor for domestic abuse. And if someone is a known verbal harasser and is deemed to be at risk, a gun can be removed from that person, or that person may not be permitted to have a gun. So we're...
That sounds kind of complicated. How will that law be administered?
Yes. I actually don't know right now how that law will be administered. It is complicated, but it's part of a larger strategy, legal and legislative strategy, to keep guns out of the hands of people that are at risk to harm self or others. So it's a broadening the scope of who is considered at risk to be harmed and a harmer. So legislative advocacy is one of our areas of emphasis. A second is public education. We hold really, I have to say, great quarterly meetings open to anybody. And we have explored over the years just about every aspect of gun violence and gun violence prevention, meaning we've dug into the Second Amendment. We've dug into the role of mental health as it relates to gun violence. We've looked at a public health framework. We've learned about gun safety. We had a speaker from the NRA come and talk to us about proper gun safety.
Mm-hmm.
We do have some grandmothers that have guns. We have grandmothers that have that grew up in households that had guns. And it kind of underscores our commitment not to address guns, but to really emphasize the safe and responsible ownership and use of guns.
Let me back up a little
bit,
because you mentioned the Second Amendment and mental health and public health. Our current administration in Washington is, of course, diverting attention from the idea that guns are the problem and going to a defense of the Second Amendment. Let me pursue that a little bit first. My understanding is the Second Amendment is... gun ownership for lawful militias. Where does it say everybody should have a gun in their house?
You are so right. It does not say that in the Second Amendment. What was a huge setback for the gun safety movement was a Supreme Court decision in 2008 written by Justice Anthony Scalia that interpreted the Second Amendment to mean an individual has a right to bear arms.
Ah.
And that is really our significant problem, is that 2008 Supreme Court decision. And we're going to need the whole movement, the whole country is going to need to figure out a way to revisit that, because that we do not believe that was the original intent of the Second Amendment.
So was that a constitutional amendment to the amendment?
It was an interpretation of the Second Amendment. Yes.
So it didn't actually change the Second Amendment.
No, it did not change the Second Amendment. Yeah. Yeah.
Then we go to the idea that mental health is the problem. How much of the violence that we now see is caused by people who are diagnosed with mental illness?
Mm-hmm. I appreciate this question, and this is when I'm a retired clinical psychologist, and when I put on my that hat to kind of address this from two perspectives. One thing to know, and it's a very sobering fact, is that 2/3 of gun-related violence is suicide. Hmm. 2/3, that's a lot. Mm-hmm. And people who choose to end their own life are often, very often, struggling with depression, struggling with anxiety disorders, struggling with substance abuse, struggling with some combination of all of that. There is a mental health component there. However, it is the access to the gun that is the critical factor, and whether that very distraught person who may be trying to survive huge amounts of despair chooses to take his life or her life. The proximity, the access to a gun may be the critical factor. In the large school shootings, mass shootings such as Parkland or Columbine or any others, there's no doubt that these shooters have struggles, have challenges. I could not put a definitive mental health diagnosis on them. I think it's a problem that is better characterized by social alienation, lack of attachment, a kind of outcastness that is really deepening for these people. It is not as simple as this is a depression and this person decided to do this. So it is also important to know, actually, that people coping with a chronic mental health issue, such as schizophrenia or recurring bipolar disorder, are more likely to be victims mm-hmm. of gun violence than they are to be perpetrators. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
So that has made me wonder about this notion that we can prevent mass shootings and even prevent gun violence by attending more to individuals' mental health. Can we actually do that? And how, again, would we monitor that? It seems to me it would be required that counselors, psychiatrists, and psychologists are left holding the bag to evaluate an individual, and then they're responsible for reporting to whomever that these people should not have guns or should be watched. It sounds to me like that's a slippery slope to some pretty draconian laws. Can you, as a clinical psychologist, actually support the notion that we can prevent gun violence through mental health monitoring or an improved mental health system?
Well, I definitely think this country needs an improved mental health system. That is a given. And that ranges from eliminating stigma around mental illness to making mental health assessment and treatment far more accessible to people. However, it is fiction to say that we could solve the gun violence problem by better mental health. Actually, not at all. We may be able to help people who are suicidal if they could get to the help. We did pass in Washington State in 2016 an initiative called Extreme Risk Protection Orders, which allows law enforcement and families to petition the court to remove a gun from somebody deemed to be at risk to harm self or others. Hmm. And often those are people, if they're especially, again, if they're suicidal, who are in a state of great despair and a state of hopelessness. And to separate them from a gun is a very good idea.
Sounds like a good idea.
Yeah, a new tool. So we need a whole new approach to mental health in this country, or an improved approach, but it is not the solution to gun violence. And it is a complete, in my opinion, cop-out for the NRA, for the gun rights people, for the leadership of this country to point the public in that direction. It is absolutely a dodge.
You're listening to Real Talk. I'm your host, Susan McCabe. The subject today is gun violence and how to prevent it. We can do this thanks to Windermere Real Estate for their support, making our community information programming and our emergency alert service possible. I'm talking with Margaret Haldring, founder and president of Grandmothers Against Gun Violence. And yes, you just mentioned that the idea that a better mental health system can end gun violence is a cop-out.
It's a cop-out.
Mm-hmm. What about the public health approach? Well, looking at gun violence as a public health issue, how can we succeed at preventing gun violence with that approach?
I think there's a lot of value and a lot of possibility in using a public health approach. A public health approach looks at how frequent is this problem? What are some of the predictor variables to this problem? What are some of the interventions on a population-wide basis? If we look at other public health examples that have been so successful, how this country basically no longer smokes cigarettes to the same degree that it once. That was a public health approach. Number one is learning how many people smoke, at what age they tend to start, learning the consequences of smoking, undergoing massive public education about this via on everyone's cigarette pack, the warning signs. Mm-hmm. And slowly it changed. Slowly there was a new cultural norm that replaced the old cultural norm. It's no longer cool to smoke. Same thing for bicycle helmets. We changed how we address that. Seatbelts in cars. Mm-hmm. These are really promising models. And I think we can do this with gun violence. It can be no longer cool. Yeah.
To have a gun.
Or excuse me, Susan, for interrupting, but maybe more accurately stated, to have a gun irresponsibly. So maybe you have a gun, but you learn to lock it up. You learn to handle it differently.
And you don't use it on your neighbors. Each of those instances that you mentioned, cigarette smoking, seat belts, bicycle helmets, required considerable research in order to justify and validate the idea that things need to change for the sake of public health. My understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, has been that research on gun violence has been prohibited by the NRA and or by our government. What is the status of research on gun violence at this point?
Well, you are right. In 1996, Congress prohibited funding to CDC for the purposes of studying gun violence.
That far back.
And this was an NRA lobby effort, a successful NRA lobby effort. Under President Obama, he issued some executive orders that returned some funds to the research program. No surprise to hear those funds were withdrawn. There was a new executive order in this administration, and so the funds are no longer available. The absence of research is a huge gap, a huge problem. Just as you say, we want to enact policies that are going to work. They're going to make a difference, and we need to study that. I'm just really proud and happy to say that Grandmothers made a $10,000 contribution to the University of Washington School of Public Health Department of Epidemiology in late 2017 to support their research program into gun violence. And we have a commitment to help fund them annually.
So it's not that that researching gun violence is against the law. It's that funding it is not going to come from the government.
Exactly.
So private funding can support research.
Yes.
Oh, that's very exciting.
Yes. Yes.
How many others are doing this?
Well, thank you. That we just learned last week, actually, that our model, this model of a grassroots organization such as Grandmothers stepping up to fund academic scholarly research is an original.
Huh.
And so our the program we've supported at the University of Washington ran a study and has just recently learned, like 2 weeks ago, that the study was written up and will be published in the American Journal of Public Health pretty soon. So, and it will say this research was made possible by Grandmothers Against Gun Violence, Seattle, Washington, and other colleagues of our principal researcher, of the principal researcher on this study, have gotten in touch with him saying, what is this? This is an interesting idea. This is a first. So we're hopeful that while we wait for the government to wake up and get its act together, other organizations and foundations and philanthropic individuals may step up.
Do you have a sneak preview on the results of the research that they've done?
It is embargoed.
Oh, it is.
I don't know it myself. I don't know it. He is such a wonderfully ethical, wonderful, competent human being that he has said, I can't tell you anything.
Can you tell us the name of the researcher and the title?
Oh, yes, I can. The name of the researcher is Dr. Ali Rohani Rakhbar, and he is a pediatrician with a doctorate in epidemiology and a master's degree in public health. And he's from Iran and came to this country to go to medical school and is at the University of Washington. And we are all blessed that he is here and he is breaking ground.
Well, and I'm surprised that $10,000 can actually get something done.
Well,
it's a wonderful contribution you've made, but it's not a lot of money.
It's not a lot of money.
In the world of research.
No, it's not a lot of money. He is a miracle worker.
Great.
Yeah.
That's very exciting.
Yeah.
So when we talk about legislation, I know you're working primarily in the state. I'm going to guess you know something about national legislation, though. What I've learned about legislation, particularly in our federal lawmakers, among those in Congress, is that bipartisan laws are the ones that live on.
Mm-hmm.
What sort of optimism, if any, do you have that our federal legislators could come to some bipartisan agreements to prevent gun violence, laws that might live?
Under the current makeup of our Congress and presidency, meaning Republican majorities, highly supported by NRA contributions, I don't have a lot of optimism. But it is 2018, and we do have a midterm this fall.
Yes.
And I think things might well begin to shift. What we've learned on the state level, and as you know, states are often laboratories for this kind of thing, there can be a bipartisan coming together around the issue of suicide. That is a place where the NRA and the gun violence prevention groups have been able to meet and support legislation over the last couple of years. There's a program at the University of Washington called Forefront that's been a leader in suicide prevention. And they were able to build an excellent bipartisan approach to some bills over the last several years that are seen as suicide prevention bills. So that's a meeting place. In some states, such as Florida recently, we saw a bipartisan coalition to raise the age from 18 to 21 when someone could buy an assault weapon. That failed this year in our Washington state legislature, which is shameful.
That's surprising as well. Yeah.
It's surprising and it's really upsetting. And it's just recently happened, of course, since the session just ended. But it does seem that there is potential for bipartisanship around the issue of assault weapons and bump stocks and some of the devices that really no one can defend as necessary.
Right.
For any reason.
Who needs an automatic weapon in their home?
Exactly.
Yeah. It's outrageous. It's ridiculous.
It's outrageous.
And tell me if it's Florida or Texas that passed the law to arm teachers.
I think regretfully that that is included in the Florida school safety bill, but I may be wrong. Mm-hmm. You think that, yeah.
I think it was one of them, Florida or Texas.
In Florida or Texas. The whole issue of arming school teachers is just really ridiculous. It's hard to believe we have to waste a breath on this.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Yes, that's the perfect way of putting it. How can we possibly be wasting our breath on the discussion of arming teachers?
Yes.
Come on, people.
Yes.
Talking with Margaret Haldring, founder and president of Grandmothers Against Gun Violence, here on Real Talk. We're at Voice of Vashon at 101.9 FM, KVSHLP, Vashon Island, Washington. You've got some interesting statistics here that are shocking, honestly. Over 115,000 people are shot annually in the United States. Americans are 10 times more likely to be killed by a gun than residents of any other developed country. When you present these kinds of statistics to NRA folks, how do they respond?
They respond very much as we were talking earlier, that it's not the gun, it's the person. And it's a mental health issue, that we live in a dangerous, if we would only do a better job catching criminals and taking care of criminals. It's hard for me to even articulate the response, but they don't respond directly to those statistics. They do the diversion tactic. They try to take people's attention over to mental health or criminals.
And I guess another of my questions is, how many suicides or domestic violence deaths or accidental deaths are committed by criminals?
Not many.
Yeah.
Actually, not many.
So the percentage of deaths from gun violence due to criminal activity is much lower than...
Much lower. Actually, much, much lower. That's an excellent point.